This is Sam Robson. It is March 14th, 2017, and I am here at Redemption Hospital as part of our CDC Ebola Oral History Project, interviewing Mr. Arma Kiawu, who is part of the Men's Health Screening Program here in Liberia. I'm very happy to have you here, Mr. Kiawu. Thank you. Could we start out? Would you mind just saying, "My name is," and then pronouncing your full name?
Oh, my name is Arma Kiawu.
Thank you. And what is your current position here?
Oh, currently, I'm the mobile team supervisor and also the logistic officer and the cement tech for the Men's Health Screening Program on the mobile team.
Thank you very much. And can you tell me when and where you were born?
Oh, I was born in Kwenkema County, Vagwe. In Liberia, that's where I was born. Grand Kema is located on the west side of Liberia, close to Sierra Leone.
Did you grow up in Grand Kema?
Yeah, grew up in Grand Kema at the age of 15 before coming to Monrovia or Mosterrada County.
Who raised you?
I was raised by my father until my stepmother took me. Well, basically I spent 5 years with my stepmother and 10 years with my father.
Sure. What did your father do for a living?
My father is a PA. Yeah, he's a physician assistant. He used to work at the Mana River Union at Mana River. Mana River is at almost close to Guinea and Sierra Leone. Yeah. They should be a mining company there at that time. He used to work there. But currently, he's running his own business, a pharmacy. So currently, he has his own pharmacy he manages.
And how about your stepmother?
My stepmother is a farmer. Yeah, she's just caring. Yeah, at the time, my mother was not around. Because my mother died during the war. And at that time, I was smaller. So my father and my aunt managed. So at that time, he didn't have a wife because his two wives passed out before the war. So at the time, it was only my mother. So when the war began, my mother left. And I think I was little, 3 or 4 years. So my stepmother took me for some time. When I came out, I came back to my father. Right after the war, I came back.
So why at age 15 did you come to Monrovia?
Actually, at the time, because when this particular war started, the gun recent war between Chastito or the one that the rebel came in, we left from Liberia to Sierra Leone. So we went, life was not too good because my father is from that side. So his grandfather is a Sierra Leonean. So he had a place there, but the living condition was not juicy and there was no good learning process. So we were forced to return to come back. So when I came back to Liberia, there were no good facility there, no good schooling. So my father requested my elder sister to help so I could come in town and go to school. So luckily I switched from Cape Mount to Mosterrada so I can start going to a better school.
What school did you go to once you came to?
Actually, when I came, it was the plan of going to school, but I found it very challenging when I came. I found it very challenging because there was no way. Because I came that year, I didn't go to school. The following year, I had to go. So I have to get engaged into a business before going to school. So I used to go sell in the night, which means I sell like for 2 years and save money. Then when I get 3, I start going to school. So usually I start going to a school called Mark Ritchie Memorial School, but I was forced to go in and out because my sister also was in school and she had children. So I have to stay home and take care of the children in the day. She come in the evening, I go in and out. So I was forced to do that until for five years, I have to switch again to another position so I can really focus on school. Because it will be difficult learning in the net at your useful age, you will not get all the material for learning, and you find it very challenging in focusing also.
What kinds of, you said you were doing some business?
Yeah, the business was kerosene business, because after the war, there was not much current. In fact, there was no current at all. So more people were focusing on lantern, which means this kerosene, pouring it and light it up with a wick. So basically more people were using it. So I get involved into that business, like about 1 gallon today, 2 days, I sell it, I finish. Maybe I made something there, 450 LD profit or 500 profit, I go another 2 days. So which means I can sell in the month, if I can sell 10 gallon, I may be able to get up to $15,000 or $16,000. So I can able to save to go to school. So basically I was doing a kerosene business for 2 years.
When, what were you studying?
Well, at the time I was doing general course, because we didn't have a specific course to do. So you would have to take all.
Right.
So which means taking 13 courses, taking math, taking English, chemistry, biology. But at that time I was not taking biology because I was still at junior high. So I was taking like 10.
Were there some courses that you liked better than others?
I really like social study and science. Yeah, social study and science.
What happened after school?
Yeah, really, up to currently, school is something challenging, but you have to be focused and you have to be determined on what you want. Other than that, you don't see, especially when you don't have somebody to say, yes, let me provide the finance, it's something that is very challenging. You will try to provide the finance, but you will not be too focused, because you're focusing on what to get money, you're focusing on school. Somehow the mind will be occupied, but you will try your best. So when I keep pushing until I graduated, recently I graduated 2016 and get into a computer or something, which I start doing database management. So this year I intended to do biology and chemistry at the State Royal University. For now I can say I have resources for that. Maybe I can say I'm working, I can order raise money for that. So I intend in June to do biology and chemistry, because I intend to do public health.
So can I ask, what happened with you when Ebola came to Liberia?
Actually, when Ebola came to Liberia, before Ebola came, I was working at the supermarket. So I had some misunderstanding with the management, because working in without contract is something difficult, so I have to leave the job. So when I left the job, I started my own business. I started to do wearings, which means I started to sell slingers, shoes, slippers. So after some time, things were improving. But at the time I started, it's like 2 months in the Ebola time. So where I was living, I had one of my neighbor. And actually he was not my close friend, but he was my neighbor, which means he shared an apartment with me. He started to get ill. And his relative really didn't want to get involved. So I recommended to them that they should take him to the ETU to get him tested. If he is negative, if they don't want to take care of him, I will take care of him. So they took him to MSF. But the information they brought back to me was contrary. That they tested him and doctor said he suffered from typhoid. So since he suffered from typhoid, they gave them a first care bucket. So when they brought the first care bucket, I said, okay, sir, I think I can come in, because since like that, he has some protective gear, so I can start using it. So I started to care for him. His girlfriend and his brother. But his brother usually started first, but he got afraid because of the rumors you were having. he drove by. So I and his girlfriend started to take care of him. So we take care of him home. We found a PA that used to come and give him medication. But after 3 weeks, he passed out. And when he passed out, really I suspect myself that I'm a direct contact of getting sick of Ebola. Because he showed like 4 or 5 symptoms of Ebola, which means throwing out and toileting, fever, headache, red eye. Everything came up. So immediately when he passed out, I conclude definitely that if I get sick, I go into the interview because there's no way I can hide from that. So I get involved with Ebola when my neighbor got sick and I took care of him and he passed out. I started to get sick. Right after 1 week when he was buried, I started to get sick. So when I get sick, I decided that I got to go to hospital. So before going to hospital, I decided to go to a clinic to do checkup. The clinic said, yes, we can do checkup, but for now, the procedure in the country, we will not be able to do the checkup, so we refer you to go to a bigger hospital. I think it will be preferable for you. So I decided to come at Redemption here. But at the time here, there was a ghost camp because no one working, no health workers. In fact, when you reach at the gate, they will tell you, if you know what I know, go home, because if you enter, you will not get care. Because no health worker are there. Because at the time, 3 health workers already died here. So everybody are afraid. Even the people at the transit center here, because Redemption have a transit center, even the people that were there, they were not careful. So the only thing they would do, maybe they would come and pull the food down. If you have strength, you take it and eat. If you don't have strength, then that's it. So I came at Redemption 2 different times, but the atmosphere I saw, the information I received, I just decided, I said, but then I have to go home and keep managing until I can get space at any other bigger ETU. Because at the time, MSL was full, no space. EWA, no space. JFK, no way. So I decided, so what I did, immediately when I start to experience, just say, fever, I call my fiancé mother. I said, oh, I'm not really feeling well. So Jesse can know. So the following day, it started to get worse. Call her back. I said, just to remind you what I told you, I'm not still feeling well. So you can know. So the third day, so I call my sister. I said, I'm not feeling. I call my fiancé mother again. So the fourth day is something that the fever start coming up. You take any other medicine, it's not working. So I start throwing up. The fever getting worse. So my fiancé mother called me. She said, okay, you know what? I was lucky to go. I know someone at JFK, and JFK have an ETU. So I will send you there. So you will go there, they will admit you and they will give you bed. If you tested that you have Ebola, they will take you to the ETU. So I said, okay. So they work there on a Saturday. So Sunday in the month, Saturday in the evening, she called me, she said, I'm receiving the information that Allen Clinic will be opening, which means a new ETU will be opening. So stay on port. If the information you confirm, I would prefer you go there. So I said, okay. So Sunday morning she called me, she said, yes. You sure that new ETU will be opening at the clinic, so I'll prefer you go there today. So we were on that Sunday, I said, but then now I'll go in there. So I woke up, I only told the people that were near me that I'm going to the hospital, I'm coming back. Because people are around me around my neighbor, I told them that I was sick, so which means they were aware. So immediately they were aware, they know that I said, man, you have to go to the hospital. I said, yes, I'm going. Because in a particular house, in my neighbor, we had like 3% are passing. Three percent. And in my community, they have more than 50% are passing out in our community. More than 50 in that particular community. But in the yard that we're in, three of my neighbor passed out. My friend, one people with the owner of the area. So I went to the ETU and fortunately, luckily, I was among those people that survived.
Can you tell me about, well, first I'm interested, was there anyone in the neighborhood who wanted you to leave immediately, who was not?
No, not actually, the people that were close to me really, they really helped me, which means, because there were 5% that were really knew that I was sick. These 5 people really encouraged me. They didn't really drive me and say, go away because you're sick, you have Ebola, you have to go. The only thing that encouraged me, we will give you food. If you need help, we will help you, but you need to go to hospital before it gets worse. You need to go to hospital before it gets worse, because if you don't go, you may die. And at that time, my early witness, they took 2 people from Naya, not just 2, our entire family. And the man and his wife passed out, and two of his children survived. Yeah, so really I was afraid, but I have to take the decision to go. So for me, I feel that the sooner the better for me. So really, the people that were around me, they really encouraged me to go to the ETU.
So once you're in the ETU, can you tell me about being in the ETU, about arriving, about what it's like in there, what it looks like?
Being in the ETU, actually, it's something, it was a unique experience and a difficult experience and a memory that I will never forget. It's, no matter what happened, I will never forget, because at the time they opened the ETU, my friend I was taking care of, he and his sister came. They all escorted me there because for them they feel that you don't know us from nowhere. Why would you come and help our brother and get sick? So if anything happened to you now, our family name may be in problem tomorrow. Maybe we will become enemy to your own family that we use you to kill you for our own brother. So I entered the ETU. But at the time they opened the ETU, the staff were really, the workers were really supportive. The doctors were really hard working because they work overtime, really. They really, really work overtime because when we enter, they provide our place, they provide our everything for use, they provide our food, all our encouragement, the psychosocial team, we're on time. If even you don't have help, they provide you because some people don't wake up. If you require pampers, they put pampers on you. If you require psychosocial, they provide psychosocial support. Medication, they provide it. Even to the extent that even the encourage you, say you can come, you want to come out and take air, which means they hold your hand and carry you outside and walk you back. And some doctors that could really remember, like really, there are many, but they feel like you remember, like that Masak, that Mamodu. Yes. Momolo and the late ETU director at the time, the Ugandan lady that passed out, and I just forget about her name. Recently, Dr. Atai, Dr. David, Dr. Richard, Dr. Siane. Yeah, these are some of the people that go in the psychosocial thing, like one of my friends that right after the Ebola time, really get close to him, Siddiqui. Yeah. And Samuel Mento, because these were the people that were really encouraging people coming in, talking to you. Because the encouragement really helped. It really helped. And when when I get in the ETU, they encourage me. When I start to recover, I start helping other people push me. Because when I recover, I start a join on the psychosocial thing. Because I was staying in the ETU, but I was working for people. Which means if you are unconscious, you don't identify anything, I go out and find your relative, which means some of your relative may come, they're looking for you, but they don't know, you don't come out. So how would they know that they have family in there? So you have to give who the person you're looking for, how they look there, what their name. So yeah, really, then some of the people are helped, some of them survive. The only frustrating part about it that some of the people are helped, some of them died, and it really break me down. Up to now, if even I see someone their relative, I don't have the face to really look at them, because sometimes I just feel like I think I should do more than what I did, but on the other hand, I can't do more than what I could do, because I think I was not a health worker. It was just something that I think that I could do to help. And by the grace of God, I helped some people to survive. And a lot of people came up with me that today, some people can even say, oh, my son. I even got a lady that she took me to be her son. Up to now, when you call her, you say this, she will come, because she knows me well, she knows what I stand for. So the Ebola experience, it was something tragic for me, and it was something that I will never forget. Even up to now, when I say it, I think about it, it's something that it's not good. And really, this is one of the reasons I joined this program. Because right after that, the thing I started thinking about, in case Ebola continued 2 years, how will it be? How many people will die? How many people will suffer? So immediately when I came out, I intend to go to come back and work. Actually, was my intent, but at the time, there were a lot of struggling to get through to work. And besides that, you will come, you will volunteer your service, it will not be bad. To volunteer your service is not bad, but at the time they were not, the hospital and charity were not willing, because there was some major agreement between the workers and the government on salary. So when I came in, I went to the ETU here and told them that I want to come in. They say yes. So we encourage you to go and rest for some time. After we settle everything, then we can call you back. But right after I went to wait for some time, I get a call from my in-law. So I have to go and get involved into a mining activity. So I was called to be an agent on the field. So I went there for 3 months. So immediately when I come by, entire process for overall the ETU were closed. So when I came back, I said, but nevertheless, I can still do something. So I started to get involved with the survival activity, which means those who direct that went to the ETU and get sick with the signs and symptoms and survived, and those that family were affected home and their parents passed out. So we started to identify with them in the community. So for instance, I start with this community, which means this particular area we have from the bridge, the Gibraltar Bridge, coming all the way to Poora, etc. too. So I decided to get engaged with the survival community. So I started attending survival meetings. I started to attend psychosocial workshop. I started to attend trauma counseling workshop, just so that I can get understanding about some challenges that I will face when I meet people that face the same situation that I face. So I start to meet with, because at the time we had three survivor groupings, the network was Sao, Isa, and the Isel. So We from this side, we had another grouping. Then they had a national grouping, which means the government is controlling, which is the network. Then they have another grouping that is separate from the government called ISA. So all these groups are different. So we start to engage all of them. Since we are a survival group, what can we do to help the survival community? What can we do to help all the people that were affected? So we get involved. So luckily when I was involved into the activity, having meetings, having workshop, a various area, talking that survivors should get trauma counseling, survivors should get medical referral because of the complication that survivors are faced with. So we start to engage the national leaders so that at least so they can be able to help on the in this direction. So that's how I get to get involved with the Mayor Health Training Program. So when the Mayor Health Training Program was about to start, the then director at that time requested this particular setup because this setup had more survivors to send someone in to sit for a workshop to do counseling. So unfortunately, I really didn't know that I was coming for a job. The only thing I knew that I was coming for a counseling process to go through it. So right after the counseling, I was informed that, oh, we're about to start a program. So this is how we're doing the counseling. So I want you to learn it to your tips because you have many challenges. You have to face it and you have to solve some problem on your own. I said, but then, what is the program about? I said, is to stop the reoccurrence of Ebola virus. I said, but then, hey, for that, I long been wishing to be part of it. But since now I'm into it, I will work to see and make sure that the goals of the program be achieved. So I said, but then, since like they are away, and other capacity you people want to me to serve, I can serve. So I had to serve as a seaman. Cimetech, and I went through the training. After some time, I went through the counseling. Also, so with me, I also start doing counseling and start doing cement collection. So after some time, the entire office material, the guy that was doing it resigned. So I have to take the responsibility or they turned the responsibility over to me because they wanted to entrust me with the property and they want to see how really I can perform if I receive the materials, because keeping material like more than $10,000 or $5,000, even $1,000, you have to be careful. So luckily, I'm into the program, we are moving, and I'm sure we from the time we started, there is no reoccurrence of Ebola through sex or sexual transmission. So I think we are achieving our goal and we are moving on.
Great. That was really a brilliant explanation of your Ebola roles. Thank you very much. I want to go back to a few things, if that's okay. No, okay. When you were in the ETU and there were the psychosocial people there, you know, what kinds of things did they say to encourage you?
Okay. Some of the encouragement were, one, eat and drink enough water. That was the first one. The second one was, take your medicine. And the third was, everything that happened, you have to accept it and move on, no matter good or bad. It is good you live, but all the people are dead and gone. As long you live in, you have to live by the challenges and you hope for the better. So one of the major encouragement was, eat, drink enough water and take your medicine, because that is the only way you survive. Because if you don't eat to take your medicine will not work. And if you don't want to drink, you're losing fluid, throw it out, you toilet it, so you have to eat a drink. So basically, that was the one of the major requirements. You should eat, you should drink enough water, and you should take medicine. And if you say, yes, I'm eating, but still I'm not recovering, you say, yes, you are better than the person that is there, they're gone. So as long as you are living, thank God that you are alive. And as long as you are alive, the challenges that you are faced with now, you have to accept it and move on. And as long as you're sick, the only thing that can save you, we don't have medicine now for Ebola. But this sign and symptoms that you are faced with, we can provide some medication. Like if you are vomiting or you have a running stomach, we have medicine for running stomach. We have medicine that can reduce headache. We have medicine that can reduce or stop belly pain. So we can give you this. But we can give you the full insurance that we have Ebola medicine. So we can tell you that if you take this medicine and you eat, you'll recover. And there were on these measures that we are really, some of us were moving on, and we'll recover.
So what I'd like to know is, and we'll go through your experience more broadly, but were there lessons in how your counselors related to you as a person, the kinds of things they told you to keep your spirits up that you're able to use actually when you started counseling for the men's health screening program? I know, you know, making sure to eat and everything like that, that wouldn't apply. But the things about maintaining a positive attitude.
Yeah. Some of the things that I took from the Ebola time into the program is that every challenge you face, you have to accept it and move on. No matter bad one, a good one. Every tragic situation, you have to accept it as it is, because the living is better than the dead. Unfortunately for me, I'm surviving. A lot of people didn't make it. A lot of people that were even stronger than me, that I knew that I said, yes, the person, I want to be like this person, is the person that go away. You got the high Ebola operate. Today you're very strong, tomorrow no. You can be strong. So some of the message that I think that I took from the Ebola time into the program were, one of the questions, is a question that really most of our people ask, especially the survivor community. After Ebola, oneness. Yes, because at the time of the ETU, you think on surviving. And when you act after surviving, oneness. So at the ETU, before you come out, before you think on coming off on the ETU, or when fully they discharge you, the hospital authority will tell you that first you're going out from your result or from the test that we have run, you are negative. But we encourage you to stay, to abstain, or use condom if you want to have sex. That was one of the measures. And when you come out, those two people, the other people that you meet out, you should be ambassador that the information that they're receiving at the ETU is a play that giving people medicine to kill them or taking that blood out is not so. You should be your ambassador to encourage other people that are sick home to seek medication at hospital instead of waiting to their hospital to go take care of them there. Because if you wait home, the challenges that you'll be facing, one person understanding, being not able to solve it. But if you to the hospital, two or three ideas may help. So when we're coming out, there was some of the messages. Because when we're going to the ETU, they will tell you, say, you will die. They will give you medicine because at the time they will say yellow tablet. When they give you yellow tablet, you will die. Or when you go there, they will take your blood off for you, you die. So when we're coming out, we were there in Bethesda. Make people to understand that this ETU is not a society area that you will come to initiate you or to take your blood or so we can kill you. You should be able to encourage other people that are out there that are sick with the sign and symptoms of Ebola to come to the hospital or to go to ETU or to report themselves instead of going among people and sharing the virus. So when we're coming out, like some of the information that we receive from the ETU, these are some of the information that I receive from the ETU.
Interesting. Thank you. I have a related follow-up question, but I think it will come in a little bit. So when you first started your work with the men's health screening program here, you said you were initially working as a semen technician, is that correct?
Before the program? Before joining the program?
No, when you started working for the program.
Yeah, I was a semen technician.
What does that mean?
Oh, semen tech means you're responsible to give the instruction to the participant about the various steps of collecting sperm.
Right.
Okay, so which means the specimen is a sperm specimen, which means you give the step on how to collect the sperm. Why are you collecting sperm? That one of the reason. And when you collect the sperm, what are you going to do with it? And after you collect it, whether they will be informed about the results, and if they will be informed about the result, how many times you collect sperm from them, they have to be aware from that. That is just the first part. Okay. Then the collection part, they have to be aware the procedure and how what they will do to get the sperm. And if the sperm were to come, where would they pull it? Because you're not doing it for them. Where would they pull it, the specimen or the sperm specimen? That's the another one. And if it's difficult for them doing it, what would you do to help them do it easier? All about providing pornography, movies, or magazine. So you have to explain that to them. So like for instance, I'm going out today to meet a participant. I carry my material, my tubes, my triple pipe, my cooler with ice pipe, and the participant banner, the participant sticker, and the gel, paper towel, chloral web. Okay. So all these things are material that we use just for protective measure, and also gloves. So I reach to you and give you the information. This is the material you're coming to collect sperm. You're using the gel for masturbation. You do it until you're ready to discharge. Time for discharge, you're putting the sperm into the tube. And right after it, you close it and clean yourself and wash your hands. Right after that, you call me and I come and do the balance, the rest of it. So when you're on the mobile thing as a semen test, you give the information out on the semen collection procedure, what they should do. After that, you label properly the ID number and the date for shipment to the lab, so the lab can find it difficult identifying who is the proper owner of that specimen. And time for shipment, you have to list with the data manager and the specimen tech at the clinic to make sure that the accurate information goes to the lab. Other than that, you'll be putting your different information in and the data is putting different information in. Then when you read at the lab will say we don't find the information for the particular specimen. Then it become problem and it will not continue, it will not be good to be doing that. So you have to make sure it is done properly.
What were some common questions that people would have for you about the collection process?
About the collection process, some of the common question is how will I collect this, how will I produce this sperm? That is one of the common questions I ask. How will I produce this? Because even if you meet somebody during the counseling process, that would be the first question they would be curious to ask you. How will I produce a sperm? Will it be a medicine that you gave me for me to produce sperm? Yeah, so they will want to know how will I produce a sperm, because it's something that is challenging for certain people. They try, but it's difficult. So that is the common question for them.
Were there, when you found someone for whom it was difficult, how did you solve that issue? Can you give me an example?
Yes, okay. It's difficult for you producing the first time. I'll just say, at the first time we started, we were not doing pornographic movies. The pornographic movies were only at the clinic. But the mobile thing, because of some IPC procedure, we were still thinking on whether to use DVD or iPad. But we were using the pornographic magazine. But it was not working because the participants said that particular magazine is for no use to them. It don't stimulate them. So we decided, we asked them, will it be good we bring a movie? They say yes. So the movie helps some people. So for people that the movie don't help, what we do, we ask them whether it's a medical complication or whether they have sex normally. If you have sex normally, then that is another issue. But if you don't have sex at all, we wish the, if you try the first time, the second time, we wish the particular case to our bosses. Then we do a referral to the medical center to do a medical examination. They provide you any treatment that will be necessary from the doctor's side. Right after the medical checkup and the treatment, we go back again and try. For some people, it works. Right after that medical checkup, the treatment, they produce. For some people, after some time, they just say, it's difficult for me. I don't think I can continue. I think I would like to return. On that part, some people will tell you, say, really, I'm having sex, but I'm producing semen that is very little. So very little sperm can be sent for testing. So some of these people too, they will not be able to continue because they always producing a little sperm that would not be able to be tested in a lab.
So some people would really just have to withdraw from the program?
Yeah, some people just feel. They will just say because it's difficult producing. I've tried 2-3 times. I would just think I should withdraw. Some people tell you, say, I'll keep trying. I know time will come, I will produce. But before you withdraw, we have to encourage you, tell you that you can make it, adjust time. You have to be focused on sex because sex is the mind. Sex is not just, sex is the mind. As long as your mind is on sex, you will have sex. But if your mind is not on sex, it's on nothing. So we encourage them, send them for medical checkup. For some people, right after the medical checkup, they take some pills and they produce. For more people, I think.
But you started to take on more roles, right, than just the semen technician. Can you tell me about that, about starting to take on additional?
Yeah, so I decided to take on additional role because at the time of training, I was trained as both counselor and semen tech. But I was only taking the responsibility for semen tech because I had counselor to back up me at that time. But when we went further, we started to receive huge amount of participants. So because of that, I have to come in as a counselor and also serving as a semen tech. Because you will not go on the field, you have to see like 5 or 6 persons. You see one person, you have to be to see all those people because we have to be back before sometime 5 o'clock. Because the hospital have, the clinic have to send their report. So if we stay out too late, they will not get a report. So it will delay. So we have to come sooner. So when we reach, I have to serve as a counselor. And when I start serving as a counselor and my supervisor see I was really improving as a counselor, they say yes, but it's better, I would recommend that So our bosses can know that you are serving this role as a counselor. So before they know tomorrow, that I say, oh, why him doing it? So just so they can know. And when I came back after some time, they asked me some questions concerning about the counseling, some challenger question, and we solved it. And single-handedly, I went out, and there were no complaints from one participant that they hear any information from me that were unpleasant. So I started to take on the responsibility as a counselor.
Are there some cases that you can point to that you worked on as a counselor that that are very vivid when you look back in your memory? Like you remember them especially well.
Okay, one of the case or the counseling process that I could remember very well is when I left from Rivier to Banga. We had a certain participant there. I could remember well because the guy was someone very, very difficult to convince. In fact, when you tell him that there's a possibility that the Ebola virus means sometime he'll see me for a longer time, he tells you no. As far as he's concerned, they put to him, he says, 90 days or 3 months. And those people that told him that, they don't lie. So as far as he's concerned, there's no cement, there's no Ebola virus in his cement, and there's no possibility of even Ebola virus to get in his cement. So it was something that, but why would I tell this man? Okay, so I brought this information out about the Ebola virus remains sometimes in your brain and give him reason why it happened. The Ebola virus remains sometimes in the eye and why it will happen. And tell him why is it that they will not offer brain testing and they will not offer eye testing because no one will play with your brain. There is no possibility of me. The only way except accident, even accident, no one will be brave enough to come close to your brain. And even your eye test, I'm not wiping your eye test for you. So how would it be possible even if you lie in your eye for me to get it? Very, something very difficult. But your sperm, this is area of the white blood cells. Therefore, the sperm area in the brain. This is an area that even you taking medicine, it takes time. Even you have a brain problem, it takes time. It's something that I said the medicine will not solve. It can only control. So if I make him to understand that these places are places that hard to reach area for drugs at that time. But for the semen, your fiancé, your girlfriend, or your wife can interact with it. And if it is possible that there's a pieces of Ebola virus in your semen, it becomes active, then it becomes another outbreak. Then we'll bring the case out of what happened before we can start the program. And explain to him bit by bit. And make him to understand that I'm also a survivor and wishing that the better can happen for survivor, and there's no reoccurrence of Ebola virus because if he infect a sexual partner, number one, he'll be stigmatized more. That is the first part. The second part, your house will be quarantined. Your town will be quarantined. There will be no business activity. There will be no normal life within that area. So which means you'll be living in a prison. Because you're not moving. People monitoring you. And besides that, your country and life will be another map that Ebola is bad. People that are here helping us will flee away. Jobs that are here, people will lose job. And what will happen? One way or all of your family will be affected. Maybe when you're sick, your own people will come to country, or your wife sick, or your girlfriend sick, her family will come to come take care. The family will carry it and it will spread. And from you alone, you become stigmatized and you will not able to live with it. You will not able to live with regret that I'm responsible for this to happen. It will be something that you don't want to do. So I will encourage you to join. So these are some of the information you will see. You say yes, but if I cause somebody gets sick and die, it's something that anytime I think about it, I would be sick of it. And I would not want, I would not even want it to happen. I would not want my girlfriend to get sick. So I think what you're saying is true. I would like to join, but it will not be today. So you can come back to some time, we'll go through the process. So yeah, on that basis, I was able to give him the information, and he accepted it, and he joined, we move on.
Did he eventually go through the whole program?
And he go through the whole program, he's like graduating now from the program.
Good, got a certificate and everything.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Thank you for describing that. Are there, how do you think your own experience of being an Ebola survivor, having been there, impacted how, or changes how you can relate to people who are in the program, you know? Like, is there more trust? Does it affect, do you have more legitimacy? You know, like, those are the questions I have. How does being a survivor change your work?
Yeah. Being a survivor changed my work because there's trust between survivor and survivor. Because there's a say, especially for the survivor community, not for the working side. Because the program is directly, when we started, we were only dealing with what? Male Ebola survivors. So when we started the program, there was trust between survivor and survivor because I was already working in the survivor community, which means I already had people that I was working with, they already knew me. So they knew that I could not betray them or bring anything to them that would harm them. So on that part, there were more trust between they and me because they know what I stand for and they know how I've worked with them before. So from the program side to the survivor, they trusted me because they know that I worked with them before and they know what I stand for. So when I started the program, information that I gave to them, they really accepted, except for those who really don't know me outside of Montserrado or Morovia. These are some of the people I find a challenge with.
Would you ever inform someone from those communities that you yourself are a survivor?
Yeah. Yes. Because if you don't make someone comfortable, or if you don't feel any, you don't make anyone relax, to really give you information is difficult. Somebody have to be open to you before they give you information. Other than that, everything you ask them, they will beat around the bush. They will don't want to answer it or to give you the right answer. So until you can make them open up to you and trust you, they will not answer, you will not get the information that you want from them. So when I get on the field, the first thing I started, like for instance, when I started going out of Morovia, going like Mangibi, I met some people that I never knew before, or they never knew me before. But the only thing they knew that a program was going there to them to ask them some questions. So the only way I could make them feel very fine in talking to me is that they have to know that I'm a survivor. Because if they don't know, because there is a saying in the survivor community, he who feels it knows it. So he who feels the Ebola pains know how it takes. So from this saying, they trust. And as long as you disclose your identity, you explain your story, you tell them your challenges, they will put it in their shoes and accept that reality and move on. So these were some of the ways I was able to really relate with them. Give them my story, explain to them, tell them how I've worked and how we are making sure that things happen in the interest of every one of us, and they bring the information forward to us.
Thank you for that. Who are some of the other team members on the Men Health Training Program who you work with most closely?
Most closely, actually, to be honest, when we started a mobile team, we had the best team. Yes. Because even the clinic used to admire the team. Because number one, there's no confusion. There's no argument. There's no time for errors. And we were always together. Always. If we bring our information out, we make sure we follow it to the fullest. So we started with a four on the team. And now 14, up to now, when you bring our memories back, you will say, yeah, that will always be together. Because we started, we made sure everything. In fact, the record system that the mobile team put into place is a record system that even the clinic didn't have. So it make the mobile team participant record very straight. If you, I will be to my house, you wake, you say to, you say, GRP this. I can stay there and tell you, say, GRP this, he returned there at this. He coming so and so date. He coming for second result. He coming produce. He faces so and so challenges. I will tell you everything. So it was something that was very easy. At any time you can get information about our participant, as long as you are in the program. And you need the information for work use, we can provide it. So the team at the time we started, it was really good. It was later, they subtracted one member for us to come back at the clinic. And we still move on. So the team members I really work with and really enjoy working with, and I think it was the best was Chaeto. But now she traveled, she gone to the US.
What was her name?
Chaeto S. Young.
Okay.
Yeah. So Chaeto S. Young is the best thing or the best supervisor at the time for me, because she make it easy. She always, even though she's not deterred, she is not a dictator. Do you think this is possible? Do you think we can do this? Or how do you think we can do this? Bring your own ideas. Okay, see, I read this thing. What do you think we can add? Do you think anything should be there or we should move it? How you seeing our trip? Do you enjoy going on the trip? You think we should bring somebody else in? So she always suggesting instead of demanding on what you should do. So I really enjoy working with her at the time she was around, yeah.
And have you worked closely at all with any of the CDC staff?
Yeah. Oh, almost all the CDC staff. All the CDC staff I work with, because every day you have to relate to the CDC staff, because you have to update them in the morning meeting. You have to update them because you have challenges on some of the clients that lost to follow up. You have to tell them, what are you doing to get these people? What are efforts you apply? What are the challenges you face with? And ask them what thing they can bring in to help. So every one of them, you have to update them. And you have to ask them, if you're having a challenge, you go to them. I'm here. This thing is something difficult. How you think I can do it? Or what you think the best way? Or I have challenges in giving information out or this information out. What you think can be the best way I should place the information so it can be bad or it can sound bad? And they were always around to provide those information. If even it's something that you don't understand, they will paraphrase it the best way so that you can understand, so it can sound bad. Because if you give information to anyone that sound bad, you're in problem. You're in serious problem with that person.
Do you have an example of a time when a particular CDC person kind of did that?
Yes. At the time, I think I forgot. Let me see. I think I forgot about her name.
I'd say there's Mary, there's Beth.
It's been a long time. She came, I think, 8 months now. 8 months ago.
Okay. I had a list. Not Beth.
No.
Or Mary.
Very.
Well, that's okay.
Yeah, I have because
we'll put it in the transcript.
At the time, we had to go to Nidowen. Our first time was to go to Maigibi. Yeah. Then we say, yeah, this is our first time going outside of Monrovia. So I went to her. I said, you know, we'll be going out, and what do you think can be some of the information or some of the things that we should do so that when we reach there, things will be very smooth? So she said, okay, what you can do is that you have to get a focus person there, be in touch with the focus person, that is one. They should update you on the amount of participants you put able to see, and you should be able to tell them how many people you put able to see a day. That is one. Secondly, you should live with the participant engagement coordinator to find a suitable area that will be able to meet to do all the procedure at one area. And thirdly, you have to make sure you carry the appropriate material so it can be shot, because if you shut up and if you forget about anything behind, it will hamper your work if you reach there. So on the advices, so we came, I said, okay, I listed all. So I packed all the materials, I list with the participant engagement community coordinator how many person we're going to meet, I prepare all the files. Then do we have play? Yes. How many plays? Do we have cement? Because my main interest was the counseling room and the cement collection area. How many counseling room we have? How many cement collection area? Will we have bathroom? Will we have place to wash our hands? Will we have place that we get able to clean properly when finish? Everything was in place, but then we'll be prepared to go. So I went back to her. I said, thank you. The information you gave to us on course. She said, okay, but then I will be with you on that trip on that day. So like, we all went that morning. We went through, they inspected the area, everything was okay. And after everything, we came back. And we came back, I said, yes, thank you. Everything is in place, and we went, everything is okay. And we really want to see more people, and we came back very soon. Because everything was well organized from the instructions she gave, everything was okay. So we expected to come out very late, and we came out sooner. Everybody went. I said, but I thought we were going to spend the whole day. We went for 2-3 hours and we came back. Yeah, well, uniquely that day on that day, yeah. And I told her thank you, and everything went well. Okay. But I can just remember her name, but
we'll put it in the transcript. Yeah, it'll be good. Thank you for that.
Yeah,
thank you for that example.
I really wanted to mention her name, but I can't just remember her name.
Oh, we'll put it in. We'll put it in.
And one of the CDC person that is really good at all time, there's no bad day, is Mary. No bad day. She's always. You see, if you have people that always want to encourage you to do better, you have to be willing, because she brought a lot of changes to this program, and she bring a lot of important things that I may leave some out. Even for now, she provided a free tutorial class for us. Class that you will go to and pay money for. Like for instance, some people don't know basic computer knowledge. She said, okay, I will provide you with the training. I will provide you presentation. I will provide you slides. If you want to know about basics about public health, I will provide you tutorial. I can do that. I can even provide a booklet. You go and read, you study, you come back, ask the question. If you don't know, you go back and study, you come back, ask the question. If you don't know about it, she will make sure you know, bit by bit, step by step, just so you can able to understand, so you get. Because everything she's doing, she wants you to do better. She wants you to do your job properly. She don't want you to do errors. So if you do errors, she say, come, this is error. This is not supposed to be so. So this is what you're supposed to do, so this don't repeat. And when she finished, she follow up. She made sure to say, yeah, this thing we talk about, how is it going? Come back. I want you to really tell me, how is it going? This was the error, right? Yes. So please repeat. Tell me exactly how it's supposed to be. Explain all step by step. I don't want you to say jump, no. From this, what you should go to? From what you should go to? What you should do? Okay, and for instance, you go in the field, you did package the specimen, you did label it properly. What you should do? This time around, the mistake don't happen. You have to explain. And when she certified to her, you say yes, go ahead. And when you come back, she will do a follow-up. She say, the specimen that you brought, how is it packaged? What was the information you gave? How is it labeled? Who coordinated the process when you brought it back? Just so that the mistake don't happen. Just so that you get your work a bit done properly. So she one of the staff that really helping us, and also Lawrence, and I appreciate them a lot. All of them, Radio, and they're doing extremely well. Yes. They're doing extremely well. Especially by giving you knowledge. Something that you're paying no money for is something that people will not waste their time to do. They come to do that job and go. If you don't have how to do it, all they know you should do your job. But she educates you and she makes sure you do the right thing. And I applaud her for that.
Is there, Mr. Arma Kiawu, is there anything else that you would like to share, another memory or a reflection before we conclude the interview?
Yes, one of the things, thank God that I'm part of this program, because my main aim is to work in the interest of the program, the survival community. And one of my goals for now and is the goal of the program, which means there should be no reoccurrence of Ebola virus through sex. So we should make sure we give the exact and appropriate messages to our participants. So I'm very glad that the program have taken another strength from survival to those who have survived home or hostile ETU, and I think we are making progress on that. And one of the unique things also, I think the mobile team is doing is that by doing follow-up on lost to follow-up participants, because some of our people don't have telephone, or they have telephone but the number is off. So the mobile team have to get the list and go out in the community place to place to make sure we track these people. I think this is one of the uniqueness of the mobile team. I think this is one of the things that really get the mobile team going. Especially the case that is going on, doing follow up on the participant with our participant engagement coordinator, doing follow up with the imams community to make sure that those who have survived outside ETU should join the program. They should know the importance of the program and why we're doing it. I think it's also unique. And thanks to all my co-workers that we are working together, they are really supportive of this team. I think the team is good. And I will be happy to work with anyone or to meet anyone or to serve any capacity just so that Ebola don't come back, because we know what Ebola do. And if people are really experience Ebola, if they tell you that they want Ebola to come back, then they will tell you, say, then they may just be dead, because you can be alive if you say you want Ebola to come back. Because there is no insurance. What about your family? Your relative, your children, if you have. So, thank God for the CDC mission by taking this time to come out and listen to people like me. I'm a care for instance, giving my experiences from the Ebola time and in the mental health training program. And I'll say thank you. If you have anything, I can.
Okay.
Sound right?
Yeah, that sounds perfect. I have to say thank you, Mr. Kiawu, because just a big thank you for sharing your experiences.